Hello and welcome to the Rangers Rundown, the internet's number one podcast source for Game 163 hot takes. As Rangers fans, we are, of course, the general experts when it comes to really, really painful game after games. I am Max, and I'm joined tonight by fellow pain sufferers, Mike.
Hey, guys.
And Hayden.
Hello, everyone.
Y'all super stoked for Game 163?
Which one? Ha!
So many options. None of them involve the Rangers, though, so you can watch them without heartburn.
Since they're day games, will they be on Facebook Live?
God, I could only hope. Yeah, noon and 3 is sort of weird for two Game 163 playoffs, although I guess neither of them are losing you go home, and in both cases, that means that everyone's having to travel to make it to the wild card game or to wherever they're playing their NLDS, so I guess they want to have plenty of time for teams to like get out and get set up, but it does seem sort of strange to have two super, super contentious ball games being played in the middle of the day on a Monday.
But it's what's going to have to happen, and if you can, you know, log on your computer or your phone, then that will make your day go by faster, maybe.
One can only hope. Yeah, should be two good games. The Rockies, I guess we'll go start with the first game. So the Brewers go to Chicago to face the Cubs. Brewers' pitching situation is unclear, but the Cubs will start Jose Quintana, who's been very good against Milwaukee this season. That game should be actually most entertaining, though, because Christian Yelich has already locked up the NL batting title, is tied for the NL lead in home runs, and is two off of the NL lead in RBI. So one two-run home run from Yelich would get him the triple crown, but the National League RBI leader is Javi Baez of the Cubs, so that's a little exciting. And Game 163 does count for regular season stats, so whatever Yelich does tomorrow will potentially contribute to his triple crown. I did watch their game today. He walked like 17 times. I really kind of hope that the Cubs like just let him hit a leadoff home run just to make him think he's got it, and then just intentionally walk him the rest of the game so that he can't get the second RBI, just because Joe Maddon's a dickhead. So
I don't think Joe Maddon is quite like that.
I think he very well could be. No, I don't think he's going to give away the intentional walks, but I think Joe Maddon is a spiteful man, and he should do it for laughs.
It sounds like something Showalter would do.
Oh, man, that's... Yeah, we should go through it sometime. Just putting a list of, like, who are the most spiteful managers?
Yeah, they do this thing on the ticket. They label all athletes. They call them either a Bonds or a Griffey. Is this guy a Bonds or a Griffey? In other words, if he's a Bonds, then you wouldn't be shocked at all to find out that he did something wrong, you know, steroids or beating his wife or getting caught with drugs. And if he's a Griffey, you'd be totally shocked if something like that came out. It's how you judge a man.
It's just really a shame that it wasn't Mike Matheny who had the opportunity, because he would have just intentionally walked him the whole game and been like, and it doesn't even add to his stats. God, tanking his batting average. And that's why Mike Matheny got fired. Anyway, that game should be pretty fun. Definitely looking forward to that one. Rockies go to Los Angeles to play the Dodgers at 3 o'clock. The Rockies will start Herman Marquez, and Los Angeles is going with Walker Buehler. Both were really good against the other team this season. That one should be fun, partially because it's not being played in Coors. Instead, we played in the lovely Chavez Ravine, which this podcast, of course, does endorse as one of the finest baseball stadiums in the greater Los Angeles metro area.
True.
Yeah, 100%. We are willing to go out on that limb. One of the better baseball stadiums to be found in Southern California, for sure. So that game should be pretty exciting. Charlie Blackmon hit for the cycle today. That was kind of cool, I guess. Both teams won enormously. The Dodgers beat up San Francisco like 15-0, and the Rockies took down the Nats by a lot to a lot less. I don't even remember what the actual score was in that game. It was like I think it was like 12-2 or something. So it was 12-0. That's the even score, which I think just like segues into something we were talking about right before we hit record on this, which is what the heck happened to the Washington Nationals this season?
Man, It reminds me of like last year for the Rangers, the 2017 season, except for if we were way better going into the year, because we kind of had the similar element of, you know, this is kind of, you know, win or go home. Kind of all of our eggs are in this basket with Luke Roy about to be a free agent and Napoli and, you know, a lot of, and, you know, is Beltre still going to be good after this season? And all sorts of stuff kind of came together to make it be like, all right, it's time to go, like, put up or, you know, shut up. And completely, I mean, obviously, the bar was not as high for the 2017 Rangers, but, man, it's got to hurt. It's got to really hurt to be a Nats fan. Just watch this team do what they did, like, in slow motion, day after day. Because they never, they, I mean, they were just kind of, they were at 500 the whole season. It defies, they were the unanimous NL East. They were probably the only team expected to finish above 500 in the NL East. And here we are, and the season's over, and they weren't even close to the playoffs.
I'll do you one better. It reminds me of the 2012 Rangers, where we lost the play-in game after we looked like we had the season locked up, and Oakland caught up to us on the very last day of the season, and Josh Hamilton was having problems with his blue eyes in the sun, and or it was energy drinks or whatever, and I think that team totally underperformed. That was the unraveling of that great team, in my opinion, because Josh was gone after that, Cruz was gone after that. Teams started to look a lot different in 2013 and beyond.
Yeah, but the Rangers never pissed away 220 innings from Max Scherzer, so like I just don't know how a team that employs a Max Scherzer. I mean, we were, again, going to this just before we started, but, like, Juan Soto had one of the best rookie seasons of all time. Bryce Harper ended up having still a pretty valuable season, just sort of in fits and starts. Anthony Rendon was really good. You know, when Adam Eaton was healthy, he was really good. They were getting good bench play from a bunch of guys, and this team went two games above 500. Like, I just don't understand how this team did this.
Did Juan Soto go 3-4-5 this year?
He missed it by 8 points of batting average.
Jeez.
He went 292, 406, 517.
That is unbelievable.
923 OPS, 142 OPS plus, best hitter on the team, a few points better than Anthony Rendon.
Ugh.
Yep. Yeah.
Like while, on while, accident, right?
While playing like, good defense.
Like
Juan Soto was their like second best prospect entering the season. Victor Robles, I think, was generally considered to be the better or the closer to being a major contributor to this team. You know, and Robles hit 288, 348, 525. Across, you know, his games, he had a 127 OPS plus. Like, Robles was also very good. Juan Soto was a guy who was sort of in that, like, Leody Taveras kind of range. I mean, he was a younger guy everyone's, like, super excited about. I think he was at a higher level coming into the season because he did, I think he did get a little taste last year, too. Yeah, he did play with 2017, but you know, Robles made it to Double A as a 20-year-old, and then...
Yeah, just wild. It's got to really hurt to be a Nats fan.
Yeah, like Robles. I'm sorry, I was just looking at Victor Robles is a guy who is expected to be their top prospect, and that's like what he did. He played last year. He came up and did stuff. And last year, Juan Soto played in A-ball.
Yeah, it's not just being a Nats fan. How about just being a general baseball fan from the D.C. metro area?
True. Well,
there aren't any other teams out there, right? They don't even have any other big league teams.
There are no other big league teams out there. Nope. What was the final tally for the Orioles in the loss column?
It was real bad.
Somewhere around 115?
Yeah. 47 and 115, so with a 290 winning percentage.
Mm.
That's pretty good, right?
Mm. It's good for the draft pick.
Except there's no clear-cut number one out there. That's what's funny.
Yeah.
Talk about picking the worst season to tank. Yeah,
pretty good time for the Royals to decide to do this. I mean, Texas.
Well, and no, and I saw something too because on Lone Star Ball, a discussion about should there be penalties for teams that are, you know, tank super hard, like maybe like money penalty for every game that you lose over 100 or something like that, which I think could be really interesting. But the thing is that the Orioles didn't try to tank. They signed Andrew Cashner and Alex Cobb and, you know, made some moves to, I don't know, if you squint your eyes, improve the team. And then they had one of the worst seasons in recent history.
Yeah, it was incredible.
I think they should be relegated. It's like soccer. best AAA team, come on up.
That would be awesome.
I think that
would be fun.
Oh, of course it would be.
I still think the best AAA team would get doubled up by this damn Orioles team.
I don't know, man.
If you could build a AAA All-Star roster, maybe, but who's the best? Who was the best team at AAA this year?
Like, I don't know.
Look this up.
No idea.
I'm going to find this somehow.
Probably like Oklahoma City or something like that.
Freaking do it. Give me the AAA standings. Yeah, that's what I want. Here we go. Who's the best teams? In the International League, best team was the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs. That's the Phillies AAA. They went 84-56. And in the Pacific Coast League, best team looks like the Memphis Redbirds. That's St. Louis, coached by Stevie Clapp, or managed by Stevie Clapp, who I did reference last week. So we're going to go down here. We're going to take a look at these rosters, see if we recognize a single player on either of them. Lehigh Valley. Oh, hey, Mark Apple. Womp, womp. Tom Eshelman. Boy, I don't know any of these pitchers.
You don't know any of the Phillies minor league pitchers?
Trevor Plouffe played on this team.
Okay.
Colin Cowgill. Ryan Goins. Okay.
Those are names that kind of...
Yeah. So some bad major leaguers, and then the only pitcher I recognize here is Mark Apple, and obviously he kind of retired. So,
I think where the argument for doing so, the relegation thing falls apart is, yeah, I don't think Major League Baseball would want to be playing in a minor league park, seating 5,000 people. Yeah, that might be bad.
That would be rough. Hey, these minor league ballparks, these AAA, they get like 8,000.
I stand corrected.
Yeah, I don't know anybody on this. Alex Mejia, I recognize his name. And Edward Mujica apparently played for Memphis this season. So, Genesis Cabrera is on this team.
I think the
Orioles could take two games.
Out of 100?
Out of a four-game set. I think they could split it.
They could split it. On the topic of like penalties for tanking teams, you know, I guess the NBA kind of already has the lottery as a way to at least ensure that you're not getting the number one pick. But I was thinking about what MLB can do about that earlier today, and maybe like you have a team lose $100,000 in draft money for every game past 100 that they lose or something like that. And I thought about that for about 10 seconds, and then I realized, well, if they fail to sign a player because they can't give them enough money, the way that the rules are currently set up is that then they'll just get the pick again next year, because we see that with the Astros a couple of years ago. We'll see it with the Braves next summer. And so that doesn't really work right now, unfortunately.
Yeah, I don't think you want to punish a team for... I mean, I just don't think I would support a system where you punish a team individual, like for one season like that. I think you got to look at a team like the Astros that just doesn't give a damn and posts four consecutive. Like, after having two or three consecutive 100-loss seasons, they put out the lowest payroll in baseball, field a whole bunch of guys who, like, wouldn't cut it at AA, and say, what are you going to do about it? Like,
right. Well, wasn't there payroll, like, in that fourth consecutive 100-loss? Like it was like,
it was egregious.
It's unfathomable.
But the Orioles of this year, as you said earlier, like, the Orioles were an awful baseball team, but there wasn't very much they could do about it once the season started. They were like, well, these guys are way worse than we thought they would be. I mean, and they did make moves. I mean, they didn't trade Machado in the offseason when they could have gotten more value out of him, because they thought they might at least have a team. They didn't try and trade Adam Jones. They held on to, they went and signed Cashner and Alex Cobb. Like, I mean, they didn't pick up anybody a bit, like, huge, but Cobb was considered one of the better available starting pitchers. I think I may have advocated for him in the offseason, is like a guy I was interested in grabbing. Their best hitter. Does anyone want to name their best hitter at the end of the season?
Like, currently on the roster?
Yeah, it's Manny Machado, but like their best hitter who is still on the team at the end of the year? Either of you?
Chris Davis?
You know this guy's name. This guy has played for the Texas Rangers.
Chris Shelton. I don't know.
Spider Arias.
Renato Nunez.
Renato freaking Nunez.
Yeah.
The Rangers actually picked him up off of waivers way back early in the season.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Like, he played for the Texas Rangers. How and he funny. Was too shady to play here. And so the Orioles picked him up, and he went 275, 336, 445, 116 OPS plus.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Okay. Like, that's totally fine.
So on the discussion about, you know, how do you penalize teams, did you guys ever read the book called Fairball by Bob Costas?
No.
Did not know.
Basically, his book was mostly about how to fix baseball. And this was written many years ago, but I think a lot of it still applies. And he was a big advocate for not only having a salary cap, which they don't have a hard cap, but as we can see, teams, they respect that luxury tax threshold. They don't want to get taxed that heavily. But he also talked about having a salary floor. And that's how you penalize these teams that are just put in a crappy product out there year after year, like Oakland and Tampa and sometimes Miami, sometimes not Miami. Is you've got to be able to spend a minimum amount of dollars on your team so that you're not just screwing over your fans every year.
It's just, it's painful watching a team that does not care. Yeah. And that is going to roll out a minor league roster and still ask you to spend $65 to get a decent seat and then spend $60 on beer and refreshments if you want to make a night out of it.
And then when one of those prospects does break out and become a legitimate major league player, oh, it's time to trade him. You know, that's got to be heartbreaking as a fan.
Yeah, and that's something that I think we've seen maybe more problematically with a couple of other teams of late, and some of them have found a way of competing anyway. I mean, the one I'm thinking of like right now is Tampa Oakland? Bay.
Well, and Oakland.
Well, Oakland, but Oakland also, other than Donaldson, hasn't had a big breakout guy that they traded simply because he got too expensive. I mean, the other one I would also put up in there is Sonny Gray, but he was also bad when they traded him, and they sold him kind of at medium value.
But that's kind of been their MO. They're always trying to keep costs at a bare minimum.
Yeah, but they haven't been moving like breakout big name guys. They haven't been sort of sustaining their like year to year competition based off of trading one guy for a couple of pieces. They've just been like just rolling over the whole roster all the time and then making dudes like Matt Chapman and Matt Olson and also you know, air horn noise Chris Davis, who had his fourth consecutive season batting .247.
Craziness.
Four in a row, and the season before that, he batted .244. It's the least variance in Major League history, a record that he also held right before this. So
he's nothing if not consistent.
He's insanely consistent. No, like batting average does not remain consistent season to season. It takes something like 900 at bats for batting average to stabilize. So it never stabilizes because you know you have the off season. Like batting average does not correlate to itself season to season. Even players who are like famous are being really consistent. Like the most recent one I can think of is Nori Aoki, who played with like the Brewers and a couple other teams. A Japanese outfielder, played a lot of like really hilarious defense and was very funny when he got hit by pitches. Nori Aoki like pretty much always batted like .282 or something. He was like, three times as volatile as Chris Davis is. Like yeah. Everyone's batting average goes way up and down every season. A .280 hitter will bat .270 and then .290 and you're like, yeah, he's like a .280 guy. Chris Davis is like, nah, I'm going to hit .247. This is what I do.
And then there's the other Chris Davis.
And then there's the other Chris Davis, who posted the worst batting average in Major League history for a qualified season. He was worth like negative 3.2 wins. 168.
Was it 156? Okay.
Yeah, he's, come on, he was way better than that, dude. That's just, you're being very rude. He batted 168. His OBP would have been a bad batting average. It was .243, and his slugging would have been a bad on base. It was .296.
I still remember when JD traded him and Tommy Hunter away for Koji Uehara, and I thought we just got robbed. I was really upset. I thought Chris Davis was going to be a monster at the plate for the rest of his career, and he was for a short time.
One insanely good season,
and he got paid.
Good one.
He got paid.
Oh my. He got paid a lot. You know what his salary is going forward?
It's like $25 to $30 million, somewhere in there. A season.
In the next four seasons, he's under control through 2022. Great deal by the Orioles, making sure they locked up that star. $23 million a season.
Yeah.
That's Pujols territory, buddy.
Talk to another.
He has some deferred money as well. Speaking of Pujols,
oh gosh,
he's got silly. Yeah, he has $42 million deferred until 2037.
Oh, buddy,
that sounds like a Bonilla contract right there.
Yep, the Orioles are going to Oriole until the Orioles come home. I don't even like. Wow.
But you know, I mean, you can't blame the guy for getting paid. I mean, that's
no.
They have
he
to look out
it.
For themselves.
He earned it, but. Golly.
Because did you see what changing sports? But did you see what happened in football today?
No,
maybe.
Okay, so Earl Thomas is the safety for the Seahawks, and he's been wanting to come to the Cowboys for a while. Last season after the game when Seattle played Dallas, he went up to Garrett after the game and said, "Trade for me." And the Cowboys had interest, and they had offered a third round pick, you know, during the offseason, and then. Right around the time that training camp was breaking, they bumped it up to a second-round pick, which is what the Seahawks would get for him in compensation if he walked away at the end of his contract, which ends at the end of this year. And they said no, and they didn't offer him an extension. He's going into this final year, and he's just another player trying to get paid. And he broke his leg today, and he was being carted off the field, and he just looked over at the Seahawks sidelines and just gave him the bird. It was the most awesome thing ever.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Yeah.
It was ugly. I mean, it's a fracture lower leg. I mean, it's busted, but I mean, I think I was saying that he'll probably be out until off season.
He's likely
to return. Although it's a clean break with no ligament involvement. But that's like that reminder all the time that
players want to get paid because you never know when that's going to happen.
Yeah, you're putting your money making on the line. And it sounds a little like, I don't know, weird to say that guys who are already making a couple $1 million have to be reminded of the fact that like they could go out there and lose it all in the next play, given that that's sort of an assumption. But it's still a part of the game. Like, I don't go to work every day. Well, I don't really go to work every day with the idea that something could happen to me that I didn't do that would forever prevent me from working in my field. Like, I could go do something that would get me banned forever or whatever. You know, a football player could go in there and do something that would make sure he never gets hired again. But, like, nothing's going to happen to me at work, short of, like, getting run over by a truck that keeps me from ever working again.
Yeah,
so
Terry...
It's a weird thing.
Terry Tate, office linebacker, is not a real thing, so you don't have to worry about that.
No, if it was, though, I know a couple of folks who could probably use a good pummeling.
I'd love that Bud Light commercial with him.
No, it's somebody else. It's Reebok.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love me some Terry Tate.
Oh, yeah.
Always good to go back and just watch all of those commercials for like 30 minutes and then quote them for the next... 6 months. Oh,
it's because like everybody who's ever worked in an office knows somebody who could really get Terry Tated.
Oh yeah. Here comes the pain train.
Yeah. So football sucks and it's bad, and no one should talk about it. Although it was a mildly entertaining weekend for college football at the very least, but. We are a very serious podcast that never goes off topic or strays away from its not in any way hastily written podcast episode notes. So we're going to re-rail here and talk about the real game, which is other teams playing baseball. I guess we can edit this if we want to. But the question is, do we want to talk about postseason right now? Other teams make our predictions?
We're sure.
The Rangers. We're talking about Beltre. What do we want to do?
Let's end with Beltre.
End with Beltre. That sounds good to me. So let's do postseason. Like I can do like a little rundown on who all's in it, and then we make our predictions about who goes where.
Yes.
And then let's talk about favorite moments in the season, and then talk about Beltre, and then like next episode we'll do a full breakdown of the whole Rangers season with nothing else to talk about.
Yeah.
Sounds good to me. So that being said. I think it's important to get back into baseball and to look at what's going to be coming up in front of us, and that is the 2018 postseason. So we already talked a little bit about the wild card situation as it depends on the Game 163 tomorrow. So absolutely, if you're watching this, hopefully you hear it in the morning and you'll remember that there's a Game 163. If you're in the evening, sorry. I guess I hope you DVR'd it or whatever. Just don't Google anything and you won't get spoiled. But we do have a pretty interesting looking playoff slate. So I guess we can start on the American League side because it's a little bit easier to go through. Wild card game is going to be A's at Yankees. Both those teams won a whole pile of games. Yankees managed to get up over 100. It's the first time that the Red Sox and Yankees have both won 100 games in a season, I think ever.
Oh, here's something funny for you.
Yeah.
Were they one game off? Yeah, Baltimore was one game off. The Red Sox and the Yankees combined lost one more game than Baltimore did this year.
Oh, my goodness.
That's pretty awesome.
That is not good.
Yeah, pretty cool season. Pretty cool year that the, it's the best rivalry in baseball, and I would say probably the best rivalry in sports. Red Sox Yankees, that they both were excellent this year.
In pro sports, and, yeah, probably.
Yeah, and so the fact that, I don't know what the math is, 25% chance, 50% chance that they face off in the playoffs. I'm here for that.
It's good because the winner of the wild card game will go to Boston.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, okay, it's a 50% cool. chance.
It's a toss up.
Yeah. So, Hayden, who do you have? Yankees Oakland. Who's going to win that series or that game?
Well, I was about to say A's Magic, but then I remembered 2014 when the A's traded for everybody, including, John Lester. And they ended up blowing the game against the Royals Magic, 2014 Royals. So, let's go Yankees. Yankees and all of their home
neither
runs.
Neither game has announced a starter. Has announced a starter for that game. I imagine we may see an all-hands-on-deck sort of bullpenny situation. I mean, the A's have some really interesting relief pitchers. The Yankees have a pile of, let's say number three starter types who they might ask to go out there and do a couple innings. I mean, they could ask Masahiro Tanaka, Jay Happ, go out there and just pitch a couple innings and then see if they can get to that bullpen. So that's gonna be a good one. Who do you have in that game, Mike?
I'm gonna take Oakland. Oakland, they've been playing the best baseball recently. I mean, they've been the best team in baseball. So I go with the hot hand.
Okay, for me, I see in a one game. I think I take Oakland as well. I mean, the Yankees have got probably the better roster, maybe, but. And they're playing it at New York, which definitely benefits some of those power hitters that New York has. But I imagine Chris Davis is real looking forward to hitting in New York as well. And I don't know. I think Oakland is probably a team that's a little bit better set up maybe for an all-hands-on-deck pitching situation than New York is. So I think it's going to be a little bit less alien to Oakland and their roster to play fight to the death, stab a guy in an alleyway and drink his blood kind of game than New York. You like that?
Yeah, you have your green collar workers versus your white collar workers. Yeah.
So I'm taking Oakland.
What I will say is it'll be really interesting if the Yankees start Luis Severino in the wild card game.
Yeah, it would be odd. I don't think they're going to start him. I think Severino's a guy that they might put out there if the game is in a very specific situation in the early middle innings, because I think they're going to want him for game one in the ALDS, because whoever advances to that to face Boston is going to get a 1-2 of Chris Sale and David Price. And
I just laughed thinking about David Price in the playoffs. It's one of my favorite things.
Yeah. David Price gets so much junk, and he definitely has had his struggles in the playoffs. And Price was getting ripped by Red Sox fans for a long time this season for being incapable of facing New York. Price is good this year. He had a good season. He had more strikeouts than he had innings pitched. 1.22 ERA plus. Price, when he was asked to go out there and reduce damage, absolutely did that. So, and he's also a guy that the Red Sox can probably pull quick if the situation comes up. They definitely do have some pretty good relievers in that bullpen. And between, I would probably turn to Nathan Eovaldi as the guy to roll against the Yankees. He had really good success against New York. and he's a guy who maybe could step in and take over, you know, should David Price falter in the ALDS. But game one, Chris Sale, oh boy. No. Rick Porcello is the worst part of that rotation, so he may be the guy who slides into weird relief in the playoffs with, I don't know where they would go with it. Pomeranz, Brian Johnson, or Eduardo Rodriguez, or all the other major starters for Boston this year, but Sale Price is still pretty good. David Price is not the monster he was a couple of years ago, but he ended up having, like, for a guy who gets paid as much as he does and plays for, you know, maybe the second biggest team in the game, Price had, like, a sneaky good season, which is a very weird thing to say in 2018. But that leads to the other ALDS side, so we don't know who would go up against Boston that series, but we can make some good predictions. Cleveland goes to Houston. That'll Houston. Be interesting.
Houston.
Yeah, I think that's the easiest series to predict. I mean, Cleveland benefited from being in the worst division in baseball, so hats off to them for having a decent season, but Houston is going to destroy them.
I think that's probably the safe pick to make, but I also have to look at Cleveland and point out the fact that Cleveland had maybe the best 1-2 punch season in, like, the history of baseball. Between Jose Ramirez and Francisco Lindor, who are both, like, 8-win players this season. And
so good.
Like, Jose Ramirez may be the best hitter in the American League. And that's, like, counting Mike Trout.
Yep.
Trout's still a better player. But Jose Ramirez is the best player who plays for a team that isn't as hateful as the Los Angeles Angels. And Francisco Lindor is, like, right behind him. So, that's a good team. And they're going to start Corey Kluber probably in game one, and then Carlos Carrasco, I imagine, in game two. But Mike Clevinger has had a phenomenal season, and Trevor Bauer has been the best of them all.
Was he healthy?
I think he is. I think Bauer was announced that, like, he's fit to pitch, but they were kind of putting kid gloves on him for the end of the season. Like, Cleveland has sucked this season because their bullpen completely fell apart. Cody Allen has been very mediocre. Adam Simber broke when he went over there, which makes me sad. Brett Hand stayed really, really good. Andrew Miller has been not Andrew Miller at all. But, like, all it takes is Cleveland's two best hitters just doing what they've been doing or doing anything even moderately near it. The rest of their lineup just sort of chugging right along, getting some good starts, getting some good relief pitching. Yeah, that's a lot to ask against Houston. Houston's a really good baseball team.
Mm-hmm. I will say that Kluber versus Verlander in a game one in the playoffs.
Oof, boy.
That's what playoff baseball is all about.
Yeah, and I mean, and what if Cleveland does go Bauer? You get the, two of the most opinionated, two of the most sort of forceful voices in pitching today going head-to-head.
Yeah.
You can say what you will about Trevor Bauer's personality or politics, but his comments on, like, pitching and pitching science are pretty interesting. So Verlander, of course, is also very, very opinionated about this stuff. So I think you both have Houston. As much as I want to say Cleveland is a sneaky good team here, I think Houston's the safe one. So that would give everyone has Houston in the ALCS against the winner of Boston and Oakland, New York. Hard to say without knowing who wins that wild card game, but I think I like. It's hard to say.
I think if it's Boston, New York, I think New York wins. I think Boston is just, I don't know. I mean, when they were winning World Series, they figured out the Yankees jinx, but I think that the Yankees, they're going to come through on this one. I think they have the upper hand just because they're a swagger.
Hayden, you got an opinion?
Red Sox are super good.
Yeah, I think Oakland goes all the way through because they want to beat up Houston in the ALCS.
That would be so fun.
They couldn't quite come and take it, so they're going to take it in the ALCS. So let's go ahead and switch gears to back the National League side. So this is all contingent on
yeah,
what in the hell happens in 163.
Yeah, you can't even go very far with your predictions there.
So I think what maybe it's best to do is just go ahead and let's take the chalk, take the home teams and the 163s, because the losing teams are still in the playoffs anyway. Okay. So let's just go ahead and take those home teams. It's just the easiest thing to do.
If the home team
wins, that would make round one of the NLDS Atlanta at Los Angeles.
Ooh.
Give me the Dodgers.
Give me the Dodgers.
I'm taking the Braves.
All right.
Of course you are.
Yep. My hometown boys. I think Atlanta's roster is a lot better than most national coverage guys think it is. And I don't trust Los Angeles at all. I mean, they got into the playoffs. They squeak into the playoffs on the strength of the NL West's best team, the Diamondbacks, falling apart. And then on Max Muncy being good. And
true.
Nope.
The difference for me is the Braves are really young. And I never favor a really young team in the playoffs.
They've got Nick Markakis.
I didn't say they're all young. I'm just saying... You give the nod to the guys with experience. They've been there before. They're not going to be, you know, awed by the whole scene of what's going on.
The problem is that you guys are forgetting that after they win the game 163, Yasiel Puig is going to celebrate too hard in the dugout, and he's going to pick up Clayton Kershaw and break his back. And so I don't know why you guys are ignoring that crucial
fact.
Well,
then all bets are off if that happens.
No, they're not off. They're on the Atlanta
Braves. They're on the Atlanta Braves, yeah.
But that would give us in the second side, so the wild card game in that case then would be the Rockies at the Brewers.
Man, that's two teams that have not been to the playoffs in a while, and that have kind of I guess the Rockies were there last year.
Yeah, it will be at the Central team. So yeah, Rockies made it to the playoffs last year, and they got they
got destroyed
in the
Did not go well. Oof, I like the Brewers a lot. They're good.
The Brewers are so good.
Yeah, the Brewers are so good.
I like the Brewers because there'll be a lot of ex-Rangers there on their team to root for.
Yeah, it is. It is a good team. And the Rockies. I mean, they'll be using Marquez in the play-in game. So I don't know who their starter would be after like Kyle Freeland, I guess. It's kind of hard to say. Milwaukee's got just like, and I really want Milwaukee to go deep in this playoffs because they did like the cool and good thing that teams don't do anymore, which is they made big moves in this offseason. They went and grabbed Lorenzo Cain. They quote unquote overpaid for him. They traded for Christian Yelich, who was one of the best players in baseball this season.
Yep.
Like they had some guys come up and click as starters. Most notably Jesus Aguilar, who I think most people had never heard of before he hit 35 home runs this season and played big boy game at first base. Josh Hader was like one of the best pitchers in baseball this year. They un-rangered Jeremy Jeffress.
Ugh.
But they did some really good stuff on this team. They've got some interesting like players that they could use in terms of depth. They've got some guys who are credible pinch hitters, and they've got good defense, and I think they've got really good pitching. So I would take the Brewers in a one game set there too.
So they fixed Jeffress? Is that what you're saying? That
they unranked.
He had a bad season, and they were able to figure out how to make him better.
I'm not sure it's a thing that teams are allowed to do. As far as I'm aware, it's illegal. But the Brewers are breaking baseball law. Jeremy Jeffress.
Well, yeah,
just such filthy stuff.
Hopefully we can see if we can Jeremy Jeffress our own guys with new coaching staff this offseason into next year.
Did we all take Milwaukee?
I think.
And again, we're assuming that Milwaukee loses to the Cubs in game 163, which is cool because if Milwaukee loses game 163 and then beats Colorado, they will go right the hell back to Wrigley to play the Chicago Cubs. So we would get Milwaukee-Chicago for the NLDS set two.
There you go.
Okay, so with us all taking Milwaukee, that would assume that Milwaukee lost the 163 play-in game against the Chicago Cubs. So now that we've all taken Milwaukee against the Rockies, that means that they go right the hell back to Wrigley to play the Chicago Cubs once again in the NLDS. So any thoughts there?
Milwaukee.
Yeah, I'll go with Milwaukee.
I mean, the Cubs team is really, really good, but Milwaukee is sort of the hotter hand right now. They're playing some stellar ball, and I don't know that I trust this. I don't know that I trust the Cubs pitching staff as much as I probably should. So, I mean, Cole Hamels started off really hot there and then, you know, tailed off his last couple starts. And, you know, this has not been a great season for John Lester. Jose Quintana has been pretty much just average. Kyle Hendricks saw his crap stuff decline because his command wasn't there. I mean, their best pitcher is absolutely Jesse Chavez. So, like, I don't know. I trust the Milwaukee offense. I think it's better top to bottom than Chicago's is right now, and I think I would probably take Milwaukee.
It's going to be a great series.
Oh, that might be, I don't know. This is going to be some good playoff baseball this year. Like, no matter what happens, this is going to be some very good playoff baseball.
Yeah.
So,
Dodgers, yeah. Cubs, and then are you know, your blue bloods that have been there a lot lately, and then you have the Braves, who are young and exciting, the Brewers, who are young and exciting, and actually, you know, their plan to fix their team worked, and then the Rockies just kind of being fun.
Yeah, either way you slice it, it's going to be a good playoff series. I think just the insanity of the double game 163 that just feeds into its own wild card, that feeds into its own NLDS, is really fun. It's kooky and stupid, and we're going to see some really interesting, like, managerial decisions when it comes to how, you know, balls to the wall do you want to go, considering that even if you lose, you're still playing, but that winning is way better, because the winning team in the Brewers-Cubs play-in game not only gets to play in the NLDS, but they also get home field through the playoffs. They will have the best record in the National League.
Yeah, that's a lot to play for.
Ever happened. Like, can you ever think of a play-in game that was also for the best record? Like, that's kind of wild.
Super fun.
Kind of reminds me of an All-Star game that decided who would get home field advantage in the World Series that didn't quite work out for the Rangers, if
Mike,
I recall.
Why do you have to be like this?
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
I
really
don't think
am.
You are. I don't believe you.
I'm still bitter, okay? I'm still bitter.
That's fine. My Braves are going to trounce your Dodger Rockies in the NLDS, and all will be forgiven.
Okay.
Go Barbs or whatever. But all this baseball talk just naturally leads us to the promised land of discussing why baseball is good. And for us, that's because baseball is a game of hellos. Prospects come up. New stars are born every day. We talked about a couple today, like Juan Soto and the like, Ronald Acuna Jr. with Atlanta. But just as we're saying hello to new faces who we'll hopefully watch for 20 years, we do say goodbye to faces that we've seen for 20 years. And I think it's probably not a stretch to say we may have said sane. Good Lord. May have said goodbye to one Adrian Beltre today.
Don't do this to me.
Yeah, I'm doing it. He did it in Seattle. Got to give his buddy a hug. I mean,
I just wish they brought him in to pitch to Beltre. I think that would have been awesome. Just
it
that
been really fun.
That to have been Beltre's last at bat. Well, why not? I mean, it's like Tiger versus Phil or something like that. Although not as competitive, just good natured friends that like to give each other a hard time. It would have been a good send off.
It would have, and there were a lot of really good send offs in baseball over this last couple of days. Including Joe Mauer getting to catch a pitch today, which was really cool. Because
that's just wild. That's so cool.
It's baseball. Like there's a simplicity and a beauty in baseball to where a guy catching literally just one pitch and then being taken out of the game can just be actually so beautiful and poetic and then David Wright getting to be activated and actually wear the uniform and go on the field and play third base.
And he got on base. He drew a walk.
I mean, it's in a season where I personally, you know, my connection to the game has been kind of strained because of the way that the Rangers have gone, and just being woefully uninteresting, to be quite honest. It's it really just hits, like, strikes you, or at least me, strikes me, like, straight at the heart of, like, no, baseball is actually very good.
Yeah.
I agree. And it's funny. I mean, Maurer coming in to just catch one pitch is, it's unlike anything you see in any other sport. I mean, I was just thinking, okay, what does football have? Football has the guy signing the the one-day contract with the team after the end of the season so he can retire with the team that he wants to retire with. I mean, just completely lame, you know? Baseball just, there's so much, like you said, there's so much beauty to this game. There's so many reasons to love the game, and they know how to do things right. And that includes, obviously, Beltre, his send-off. They let him come out for warming up in the was it the top of the or bottom of the
sixth.
Yeah. And then the hugs come, and then, you know, to me, one of the coolest things was hearing from Beltre in the post game. He said that that Profar just said some things that just really hit him hard, and he said that Profar said this was one of the proudest moments of his life, getting to take over for Beltre in his last game. And he said, some other stuff that I'm not going to share with you. And I'm like, wow, that's really cool.
Jerickson Profar is our beloved boy. He is our number one son, the promised child.
The intangibles are finally on display for all to see.
Yes. Tangible.
Yes. There's a place for him on this team.
Yeah. We had a couple other good buys around the league. I know Levi pointed out that this may have been Bartolo Colon's last hurrah. I think my not actual favorite, but just guy I got to mention, Brandon McCarthy, has announced that he will be done at the end of the season, and that does mean that Brandon McCarthy will end his career with a 4.20 ERA, which is amusing, on the strength of 69 wins, which is very nice.
Pretty nice.
But Brandon McCarthy, fantastic Twitter personality, good guy in baseball generally, so he may be on the way out. The David Wright one was pretty fun.
Yeah.
Just his whole story has been absolutely wild the last couple of years, but none of them really hold up to seeing, you know, Adrian Beltre retire, a surefire first ballot Hall of Famer. I mean, my last little ray of hope there is Felix was interviewed before the game as well and was talking about how there's no way that Adrian's done, that, you know, most guys would be done at his age, but Beltre's not like that, and that Felix saw 500 home runs in him, and that he's just really got to come back and knock that out. At the end of this season, he will be at 477, so just 23 home runs short of the beautiful, beautiful 500. But that's a tall order, even with his late season surge. You have to 15 this year. That's a lot of grind to put on a body, hoping that you maybe fall backwards into 23 dingers when you've done everything else that you could possibly have ever dreamed of doing.
I actually saw a quote from him, I think yesterday, where, and this is the first I'd heard him say this, is that if he comes back next season, it's not because he's chasing 500, because he actually thinks that is out of reach for him, even with another year. That's not the consideration. That's not why he will come back. He'll come back because he still loves the game. He still feels like he can contribute and be a full-time regular. But I think he acknowledges that at his age, it's 23 home runs is a lot to ask.
It is. And yeah. I don't think Beltre is the kind of guy who's ever going to say he's going to come back to go for 500. And it doesn't seem like his MO ever. It's not the kind of, even as blunt as Adrian can get, he's usually much more evasive than that. He kind of talks the talk when it comes to baseball discussions. But yeah, I mean, I think mentally that would be the big thing to chase. I don't think he knows that the Texas Rangers are likely not to be competing for a World Series next year. And the only two things that Beltre will retire not having, like, solidified his claim on is a World Series ring and 500 home runs. I mean, he's going to hit basically every other milestone, you know, worth having hit. He got 3,000 hits, you know, easily. He went way past that. you know, more than 1,700 runs batted in, arguably the greatest defender in the history of the game at third base. You know, won a couple of gold, wait, four gold gloves, I think? Five?
Four.
So.
Yeah. I'm sad. I'm sad.
A couple silver sluggers in there. I see one, two, three, four silver sluggers over his career. I mean, he never won an MVP. He was the runner-up in 04 that last year with Los Angeles, but...
So what that he never won the MVP, though? Yeah. Because he kind of reminds me of Hank Aaron, who he never hit 40 home runs, right? He was just consistently excellent every single year.
Hank Aaron, no Joey Gallo, that guy.
Well, and what's special to us as Rangers fans for concerning Beltre is that, yes, he had a 20-year career, or he is currently... in the midst of a 20-plus year career.
Nice catch. Yes, nice years. Save.
So he... and counting. Usually the formula for these Hall of Fame players is be great in your 20s and be really good in your 30s. And Beltre kind of flipped that around. And so we got to see the Hall of Fame years. If Beltre had either retired instead of coming to Texas or had... just continued to be the player that he was in Seattle for the, you know, for 8 years for Texas, he might get a couple, he would probably get a couple of votes and hang around on the ballot for a while, but he would be in the Hall of Very Good and Hall of Very Fun. And, but we saw the Hall of Famer, you know, just despite the years that we saw him, which was what, like 31 to 39 so far. 32. We saw Hall of Fame Beltre.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Which and is super special.
Another thing that endears me to him, something he said in the postgame interview, because they asked, okay, if this is your last game, what would you like to say to the fans? And of course, he also added, I'm not saying this is my last game, but... And he talked about representing the state of Texas. I mean, he really embraced being a part of this team in Arlington and from the state of Texas. And I thought that was really, really cool because... we kind of get slighted in all of sports. I mean,
yeah,
we're not New York. We're not LA. We're not Boston. We're not even Chicago.
No.
And he wanted to play here. He wanted to be here. He said all along, I want to retire a Ranger. And I'm like, wow, it's him and Nolan Ryan.
And yeah. Well, and how many extensions did he sign with the Rangers? Like three total?
Yeah, I think so. It was originally a 5-year deal starting in 2011, so that'd been 11 to 15. So yeah, 16, 17, 18, three years. Yeah.
It there is a definite Dirk kind of mentality to it, where it's different because we didn't draft Dirk, we didn't draft Beltre, and we didn't win the championship with Beltre, and also Beltre has been here for like half the time that Dirk has, but there is a sense of like, Are you seriously gonna stay with us? Like,
yeah.
you're gonna be in Dallas. You're gonna be you know that you could like play, make more money somewhere else, or have more a chance at a championship with someone else. Are you,
or really endorsements too?
Yeah, and endorsements and away from the heat and like all this kind of stuff. Like, but you want to stay with us? You like us? You know,
he really likes us.
Yeah,
he really does.
Oh, it's just so good.
He was so good here, like we've already mentioned it, but like combining how much he seemed to like being here and the reputation that he had as a playoffs leader, as a guy who that other baseball players wanted to play with, which is something you hear, I think, super often. But like you were saying, Hayden, he played arguably his best ball here. I mean, the season with Boston is the greatest, I think, single season that he posted. Maybe you could argue that his 2014 with Texas was better, but like,
I thought his last season with Seattle was his best season. He had 48 home runs that year.
You mean with the Dodgers?
The Dodgers. I'm sorry. Yes. Yeah. The Dodgers.
That's the other one. So like his age 25 season with Los Angeles, his age 31 season with Boston, or his age 35 season with Texas. And how often do you talk about those? That you're picking between your best season at age 25, 31, and 35. Texas.
So good.
8 years with Texas, he batted .304, .357, .509 across that span. Again, outside that 1 year in Boston, easily his best numbers. He posted twice as many wins above replacement by Baseball Reference with Texas as he did with Los Angeles in one more season. More than 2.5 times as many wins above replacement with Texas as he did with Seattle in 3 extra seasons. We just saw great ball from him. And his defense, if anything, just kept getting better.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, he was doing stupid stuff.
The barehanded catch throw to first is like nothing I've ever seen before from any Ranger in my lifetime. Mm. And nor will I ever see again.
And it's ruined me because now we're going to have to watch. Like, you know, Jurickson Profar is a good third baseman.
Yeah.
I mean, and like, I mean, hell, I thought Joey Gallo was fine. Like, we've watched many an average third baseman out there. And our next couple of years, we'll be like, come on, dude. Why? How are you not making that play, man? Like, it's just easy. You run it, you scoop it, you throw it first. Come on, dude. I've seen this a million times. Like,
yep.
We're just going to get mad at the television. I'm going to be screaming about guys not being, you know, Brooks Robinson who could hit. And Adrian Beltre is being unfair to many third basemen. But I hope he just inspires a host of thousands and thousands of kids in the state of Texas and in the, you know, the DFW area generally, who want to go out there and they want to play third base. And they want to charge choppers and bunts down the line and make those just like insane off-balance wings over to first base. And their coaches are going to hate it. Their parents are going to scream at them from the front row as they keep throwing balls into the 12th row of the stands. And you know what? Props to you, kid. Like, do it. It's super fun to do, and you watched a legend.
He's inspired an entire generation. There's no doubt about it.
I hope so.
And just one last note. I was watching the game today and just kind of thinking back over his time with the Rangers, and I kind of laughed at myself because, you know, I pride myself on being a baseball fan, but mostly I'm a Rangers fan.
Yeah, definitely.
You guys know I can't watch a baseball game that doesn't involve the Rangers. And that goes for any sport. If I don't have a vested interest, I'm not going to be able to sit there and watch the whole game. It's just the way I'm built. But I was thinking back to when he was signed versus today. My impression when he was signed, I thought, what a cheap consolation prize for not signing Cliff Lee.
Yeah. Here we go again. Bringing the old guy with a good year.
And he went from that to being my now favorite Ranger of all time.
Congratulations, Adrian.
Yeah, I didn't think Pudge Rodriguez could ever be even like remotely challenged. I would be like, yeah, probably a guy I'll like a lot, but he won't be Pudge.
You're right, Hayden. Congratulations, Adrian. I think maybe he's actually good. Is he our last actually good of the season?
This is the one you'd actually print off and mail to the damn stadium.
Beltre is actually good.
Yeah,
Adrian Beltre. In case you didn't know, I know you're listening out there, Adrian. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode, whatever this is.
And every single episode, actually.
Yeah, Adrian, we know you've been here the whole time, and we really appreciate that. But also, I hope you know this: you're pretty good. You're actually good. You are Rangers Rundown certified. Actually good.
One kind of note to that, because that's not even a legacy award. Beltre actually still is good. Like, mm-hmm. He still is good. He has it with the bat, sans power mostly.
Like the physique, the gravitas, and the mobility of a fine Greek statue.
But what's crazy is that, yes, like he is relatively like immobile, and like you're not going to ask him to steal bases, and hopefully actually you would just rather have him walk from station to station.
He gives him one steal in every season 2011 till now, which is,
I know,
great.
just really just fun.
That's why he's a Hall of Famer. Consistency.
But he can still play third base, which is wild. Like it's kind of like some kind of thing where, like, I don't know, you have like an Alzheimer's patient who like used to like be a concert pianist, and then like you sit them down in front of a piano and they can play a concerto they played 50 years ago. Like, it's in them. Beltre can't, like, he can hardly walk, you know, some would say. But like, you put him you give him a glove, you put him on third base, and you just say, here, do this. See what happens and what comes naturally. And he just keeps making all the plays that he always has. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, he's considering retirement, but he's still better than 90% of the players on the team.
Yep.
That's what's funny. It's just not his standard.
To be fair, he plays for the Texas Rangers.
Well, he's not a pitcher on the Rangers, though, so.
That's fair.
I'm just saying, compare his war to the war on everybody else on the team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I have one last note on Beltre that I think is a good question kind of to end on. You brought up the play where he's charging the chopper in front of third base and slinging it over to first base. Do you think it's going to be that kind of play or the...
It's a home run from a knee. Yeah, that's
home run
the
from
statue.
A knee. Which one is the statue going to be?
Yeah, it's going to be the home run from a knee. It's harder to do the other statue, so a sculptor is going to say, there's no way.
I don't know. I think that if we had won the World Series, not to bring that up, but I think that if we had won, then that would probably be the slam dunk. But because that moment is kind of a little bit forgotten to history because of everything else that happened, maybe kind of a more evergreen defensive play might make for a better statue, but I don't know. But it's going to be really, really, really cool to see it, and I will go see it along with the Benji Molina and Neftali Feliz statue that they have out over at Texas Live.
Yes, indeed.
Baseball is good sometimes.
Sometimes it is. Hopefully it will continue to be good in the near future for our beloved Texas Rangers, even should they be going into that good night without one Adrian Beltre. I think we will find a way to keep watching.
Yes, we will.
As difficult as it may be.
Yeah.
But
somebody has to play third base legally.
I don't know about that. I hope they do that thing. They go out there at the beginning of next season and there's just not a third baseman and they play
without that. They have a glove that's like just laying on the field. You know, it's
put it
Beltre's
on
honor.
Third base.
Yeah.
That'd be kind of cool. Like a one pitch thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just tell them.
Have like a little ceremony with it, like the Dodgers did for Matt Kemp's glove.
Or, no, that was what's his name? Carlos Beltran.
Oh, that was the Astros. That's Carlos Beltran. That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
Ah, man, look at me.
It's late.
Using all of my old broken dudes. Oh, buddy. I'm just too broken up. I can't. It's gonna be weird. It's gonna be very strange to like even think about a Rangers team that doesn't have Adrian Beltre. But fortunately, we have several months to just stew on that fact. Oh God.
Welcome to the off season.
23-30.
Yep. You wake. Yeah, you look out your window and wait for spring.
Baseball
yes.
is a feral child.
Dang it! Who was it that said that?
Like
Rogers Hornsby.
No. Much older.
I don't know.
I always get his name. Oh, damn it!
And on that note.
On that note, we'll look that up and we'll have the answer for that by the time
Good
we are
night,
recording
everybody.
Again. We'll have a season in review podcast here coming out shortly, probably later this week, where we can actually talk about kind of the season that was and have a little bit more chance to digest everything and really kind of reflect rather than just going, oh yeah, Beltre did it was today. So until then, thanks for the good season and we'll stick around and good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.